So welcome. Sometimes when we have this idea about a metta retreat, we might think, wow, this is going to be lovely, just basking in warmth and tenderness. And instead, we're finding all kinds of things that aren't warmth and aren't tenderness. I know of a practitioner who, on a metta retreat, during walking practice, just found herself kind of slipping into this rhythm of, I hate metta. I hate metta. So kind of like this opposite, you know, coming up. Nikki talked about how these can be purification cycles. So this sometimes arises, these difficulties, these different experiences. Those of you who have done a lot of retreats, whether they're metta retreats or mindfulness retreats or concentration retreats, whatever, you know this, right? That often we have this idea about how a retreat might unfold and maybe how it actually unfolds. It turns out to be different. But that's okay. We're allowing ourselves to be surprised. I like this expression that Jack Kornfield has. He has this expression, the unfinished business of the heart. So sometimes when we pay attention to our hearts and give them space and some attention, then this unfinished business might arise. This might be sadness or grief, maybe this anger or hatred, or maybe there's other types of difficulties that arise, just bodily experiences, the discomfort of sitting, or maybe just the discomfort of having a human body that ages and gets sick. So if you found yourself not just dwelling in this lovely, beautiful metta field all the time today, and I just expect this is true for everybody, right? We can't expect to have just one experience. And I'd like to talk a little bit about some ways in which we might be with this, or work with this, or just include it into our practice. So an encouragement to, is there a way in which we can keep the metta practice going, even if there are difficulties or pain? And to be sure, that's not the only response. I'll talk about some other responses, but what is it like to include metta or with difficulties, or maybe I should say include difficulties in with our loving kindness practice? For example, saying the phrases and also including the sadness that might come into the heart. Or having a real sense of loving kindness, and then that openness, the softness, maybe then bleeds into some anxiety or some agitation. Can we still be with loving kindness? Maybe we're continuing to say the phrases. Or maybe there's just this incredible sense of boredom. Really? Is this what the practice is? Surely there's got to be something a little more interesting happening here. So the invitation here, right now, this portion of the talk, as I said, I'll talk about some alternatives, but I want to start with, can we let this practice be inclusive? Instead of falling into this is okay, that's not okay, and I have to fix this, or make that other thing go away, is there a way in which we can relax and soften all the ways that we divide things up? And just be inclusive. So that this practice becomes not only about befriending others, befriending ourselves, but also befriending one moment after another. Can I meet this moment with kindness? There's this poem that this poet, she's a Buddhist practitioner, and part of her practice, she's also a poet, is to write a poem every day. And I find so many of her poems express what it's like to be a practitioner, but she never uses that language. She uses more poetry, right? Some more imaginative language. And this is a short little poem that for me kind of like feels like what it can be like when you're doing metta practice and things are just really uncomfortable and you want to just abandon and either go to mindfulness practice. And again, I'm going to talk about sometimes that is the wise thing to do. But sometimes we just want to abandon everything and not come back. And she wrote a poem, and my interpretation of it is about what is it like when we do come back. So here's this poem. It's called Hope, and it's by Rosemary Traumer. Nudged by hope, the heart rises from exhaustion. It's like the great blue heron I saw this morning flying up from a wasteland on broad gray wings with strong, slow beats. For a moment, charged with grace. Before, did you see this heart? It chose to land again, bringing all its beauty to the desolate place. So I did this beautiful, you know, blue herons are these big, giant birds, and they have this majesty about them. There's always like a delight when you see them, and this bird to take flight thinking, I'm going to leave. And I like it has this word grace in here. And yesterday, Nikki used the word grace to describe loving kindness. And then it chose to land again, bringing all its beauty to the desolate place. So maybe in this way, transforming the place where it's no longer desolate. Now there's this beautiful, majestic bird there. So in this way, we can, as best we can, to keep coming back to the practice. And in this way, increasing our capacity for metta. Instead of thinking, okay, you know, of course we always start where it's easy, but we're moving towards, right, immeasurability, boundlessness. We're moving towards unconditionality. So we want to expand our capacity. And one way to do that is to just be inclusive with whatever the difficulties are as best we can. And maybe part of this way of expanding our capacity is to redefine metta. Of course, it has this warmth and this spaciousness and this beauty to it. But sometimes metta just shows up, it feels of just not dwelling in aversion. It doesn't have this grand expression or experience. It's just not dwelling in aversion. Holding the space, being with the space. So it's really important to, as part of this practice, all practices, or I would say even maybe necessary, important for life, to see how much we've been listening to an inner critic. And one of the reasons why metta practice can be so powerful, can be so transformative, is it can replace this negative diatribe of the inner critic with kind, positive, affirming, benevolent wishes. That can slowly, but it does work. I'm not saying it's fast or quick. Nobody's promising quick fixes here, but it can alter the neural pathways of the brain. We know this. Neuroscientists tell us this. Nikki mentioned this. Whatever a person frequently ponders upon, that becomes the inclination of the mind. So part of allowing this great, beautiful blue heron of a bird, this, I think of them as majestic, as landing again, is a way if we find ourselves saying to ourselves something like, oh, you can't meditate. May I be happy. But you're such a loser. May I be healthy. You're hopeless. May I live with ease. So to bring that metta practice in. And to be sure, sometimes this is mechanical and contrived and a little bit forced. But part of the way it works is to undermine this inner critic, take some of the authority away, interrupt the habit, interrupt this progression of thoughts that often happen if we just allow the inner critic to be there. And I'll talk a little bit more about this later. But first, I do want to address this idea of saying the phrases. This doesn't work for everybody. As we said, there's these three elements of metta practice: the sense of embodiment in a spacious, easy way. There's the visualization of the person to whom we're sharing, extending metta, and the phrases. And some people, there's one of those three that really resonate, or there's one of those three that really doesn't resonate. But I want to say a little bit about the phrases, is that it's okay if it feels mechanical at times. Sometimes it feels dry. It feels like this, I'm using this word, contrived, forced. And I appreciated that Nikki said that Sharon Salzberg said it was this incredibly boring week, right, when she had practice. Right, Sharon Salzberg, right? We know her as, you know, such a kind of the, I don't know, this barrier of loving kindness. And so it's okay. It's okay if it feels like it's mechanical and nothing in particular is happening or arising. You're still putting the mind to good use. Because we have many thought patterns that just habitually, mechanically run. What's the problem with metta being a bit mechanical at times? Because with that, we're feeding something that's wholesome. We're feeding the beneficial. We're planting the seeds. We're moving in the right direction. So just in the same way that inner critic can be, we just, because it's familiar and has been running for so long, we may not notice or think of it as a habitual, mechanical. In the same way, loving kindness, let's introduce some other thought patterns that can run. So it takes a little bit of effort to be repeating the phrases. So I just want to say it's really fine if at times it feels dry, mechanical. And at times we do want to find ways to reconnect to the practice. So there's an invitation maybe to be playful, be responsive. What I mean by be responsive is perhaps when you drop in a phrase and to just sense, how does it feel in the body? Maybe there's one phrase that really feels, has a really nice hum to it, where the body and the mind sing in some kind of way. Maybe some of them feel a little bit dry. So maybe you play around with and say that one phrase repeatedly for a little bit with a spacious, relaxed way. Or maybe you find that walking meditation and noticing the flowers or the plants or beauty or trees or something, if you're outside, that feels beautiful, allowing yourself to be nourished with that. So allowing yourself to explore and enjoy and to take care of yourself. Taking care of yourself might mean, we've been talking about keeping the camera on, but maybe it might mean turning the camera off. If you feel like you need some privacy, or maybe there's emotions coming up, or maybe there's a sense of you just want to be with your own experience, that's perfectly fine. Maybe you feel like the body is a little bit uncomfortable and you need to do longer walking meditation, or want to do lying down meditation and it's best to have the camera off. That's perfectly fine. So take good care of yourself, as well as taking care of the community, that if you are feeling really agitated and find that you just can't sit still, maybe you can turn your camera off and allow your fidgety self to be fidgety and just to have the space to do that without concern of everybody else seeing the big movements and getting a little bit distracted. So the invitation is maybe as best you can, or in a way that feels healing and supportive, to bring metta to the difficulties, or allow the difficulties to just be in with the metta practice. And then maybe there's some creative way in which can be a support for you and for the unfolding. But there are times in which the wise thing, the helpful thing to do is to put down the metta practice and to turn towards the difficulties. And we can discern or have some wisdom about this is just asking ourselves, is my turning towards this difficult emotion, physical experience, is this healing and helpful right now? Or am I just digging the hole deeper? Or am I finding myself getting really tight and constricted? If you find that you're getting lost in the experience more and or getting really tight, see if you can bring some metta to that. So those are some guidelines that to go for what's spacious and what feels supportive and what also feels healing and helpful. So to be sure, with all meditation practices, you know, metta meditation is not any different. There's these five perennial ways in which our clarity, our intention for loving kindness gets obscured. There's these forces of distraction or agitation that arise. Many of you are familiar with these, the five hindrances. And just as we see these with mindfulness practice, concentration practice, they show up in metta practice as well. They show up in daily life, right? These are just what it means to be a human. The Buddha described them thousands of years ago. How many people have, you know, had these experiences just like us? So these five hindrances, sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness, and doubt, it's just a natural part of being a human. They are not personal failings. It doesn't mean anything about you as a person. It doesn't mean anything about this practice. And we might even say they're perfectly natural, right? From a natural selection point of view, it makes sense to have desire for pleasant things such as food and sex. It makes perfect sense to have aversion to some things that might harm us, or makes sense that sometimes there's lots of energy and sometimes less energy. That's just the human experience. So I just want to reiterate that when these arise, it's just something that we can include in our practice. It's not a personal failing, but keeping in mind that the Buddha spoke about these thousands of years ago. For me, this is very meaningful. I often somehow find this reassuring that countless people have had these experiences. And not only that, but somehow for me and the invitation, if this is helpful for you, to feel connected, like just like all these other people right now. I'm feeling all this restlessness. How many other people have felt restless? And to kind of, if for me, it's a connection with others. So how many other people have felt sloth and torpor, have felt this drowsiness? So I'll say a little bit more about some of these hindrances. First one is about desire. And I'll just say, with loving kindness practice, with metta practice, sexual feelings might arise. Of course, sexual expression is a beautiful, natural way that humans express their love and connection. And when the heart opens, there's other dimensions of the being open to. So can we tune into what is basically a lovely life energy moving? Can we tune into it, allow it to be there without getting lost in fantasy, without repressing anything, but opening to it? And that opening allows it to move. Maybe like this energy to move and maybe feel the body and then to shade into metta. Right, this we can, there's a way in which we might reinterpret the energies in a way that it can be this a loving feeling without having to act it out, without having to get completely lost in fantasies or to repress it. There might also be some restlessness that arises. And is there a way that we can use this practice to soothe the nervous system? It can be helpful just like the simple rhythm of the phrases. It's a little bit like a rocking. Sometimes I can't help it. I find my body rocking when I'm doing loving kindness practice. So is there a way in which there can be, you can allow this certain soothing? Maybe even saying something like, it's okay. It's okay. And this spacious way and allowing the restlessness to be there, maybe it feels like a lot of energy. And is there a way with the mind and the heart that we can just allow it to be there? And sometimes it is helpful to have that expression, it's okay. I know that recently I was at somebody's house and they had a dog that was barking a lot. And I appreciated this so much that one of the members of the household said to the dog, you're okay, you're okay. And the dog just kind of calmed down. And I thought, oh, that's so great. You know, it's just this kind of this reassurance. It's okay. So maybe that's how. And then sometimes we might find the opposite. We're not restless. We just cannot stay awake. And invitation here is to open the eyes or maybe to stand up or do something like this to help the energy come back up. Or you can maybe, if you're saying the phrases, maybe say them with a little bit more energy to them. And then doubt, this idea like, what am I doing here? Sometimes that can arise, right, on retreats. And so the invitation is, can you just trust that we're planting seeds that will blossom, that will bring fruit, that will sprout? And I've seen this more so in loving kindness practice than anywhere else, that often the seeds don't show up immediately. It's sometimes later. To be sure, sometimes there are seeds right then, but it's really astounding how sometimes later, the seeds are there. So as best we can, just to trust that we're planting the seeds. And I didn't mention aversion. A bit about aversion is sometimes it's when the boredom, sometimes boredom shows up. Best you can, maybe stay with the practice, but also the opposite of loving kindness shows up. And then use your wisdom. Is there a way that you can have metta and this ill will? Like recognizing some ill will and saying, and may you be happy to, wherever it's easiest. If you're finding ill will towards one person, chances that you are, or that you can't have loving kindness for that same person. But maybe to do loving kindness for wherever it's easy, whatever is accessible, to take some of the energy and the power and the momentum away from the ill will. It doesn't always work. Sometimes the ill will just comes up and it's really strong. And I'll talk in a moment like what to do with things that are really strong, with some of the difficult things that might arise. I'll say that I have surprised myself with the loving kindness practice. Wow, how much anger came up and just out of me that I just was so surprised by. Like, where did that come from? And I couldn't even tell you exactly where it was directed, but man, was I mad. And, you know, I found myself doing a lot of walking meditation just to kind of like move the energy and to just, that's not all I could do, you know, instead of just running away screaming or something like this. So maybe you might find that that's helpful. Like, okay, I cannot sit still with this, but I'm just going to do some walking here. And as best you can, to do some walking with allowing the body to move freely, to bring some softness, some ease to the body. So at a pace that feels supportive. Maybe at first, if there's a lot of anger and or hatred, maybe at first it's a little bit of stomping, but then just to allow the body to move it away that feels supportive. So something else, if there's some difficult emotions, whether it's the hatred or this is a little bit easier with grief or fear, is way to, can we hold or cradle the difficult emotion? Sometimes we see Nikki and sometimes me, that we just naturally like, oh, it's okay. So there's this putting this hand on the chest. I don't know why. There's something about this physical gesture, this gesture, or maybe even like this gesture, kind of like holding. Or maybe even like this, like cradling. And there can be even a sense of, it's okay. It's okay. So cupping the emotion, cradling the emotion, and maybe using a term of an endearment, sweetie. Maybe you have a nickname that was used when you were younger. And sometimes I hear myself saying to myself, it's okay, Diana Banana. This was a nickname when I was young, right? And it's it just somehow, right? Just how I did here, I kind of laughed. It's just a way to, I don't know, it's like a term of endearment. So maybe you have a term of endearment for yourself that others have given you, or maybe there's a gesture. So for these difficult emotions, can we hold them with kindness and with care and with respect and honoring kind of this is what's happening? We don't have to make it go away. We don't have to make it be different. But can we bring our kindness to this? Sometimes it's helpful to say, this is suffering. This is suffering. And sometimes just saying it like it is helps us to gain just a little bit of space. Otherwise, we can like collapse into it, or attention, our awareness gets consumed, or maybe it collapses around the difficulties. And saying, oh, this is suffering, brings a little bit more space in. And of course, that's the first noble truth, right? This is like such a core thing in the Buddhist teachings. And for me, it's quite meaningful to say, this is what has been pointed to by the Buddha, by all these teachings, by so many practitioners. This is suffering. And there's teachings around it, but there's this core fundamental truth that this is what it means to have a human life. People suffer. We suffer. There's difficulties. And I'm using this word suffering, and you might have another word that you prefer. So if this doesn't resonate with you, or you feel like, oh, that's too dramatic, maybe there's something else that does resonate for you. But sometimes it's helpful just to call a spade, and to bring to mind also that other humans have this experience. Maybe it's not the exact same experience of yours that you're having, but again, this idea of connecting can be a support. So often when we have difficulties, we tend to, not only does our attention collapse, but the kind of an isolation goes with that. And we start to feel like we're the only ones, and we can get stuck in there. So this maybe bringing to mind the recognition that other people have difficulties too. And just like I wish my suffering would lessen, may their suffering lessen. Something else that we can do if difficulties arise is to soften the body. If we find ourselves sitting, you know, with some tightness, maybe do a little bit more walking meditation, or maybe even doing some lying down meditation. We all know that the mind and body are connected, and sometimes when there's difficulties, the mind and the heart get contracted. And so is there a way to bring some softness with the body? This might mean going for a stroll and kind of letting go of meditation practice, but going for a stroll and just noticing what is pleasing, what is attractive to the eye, or what is uplifting to the heart. So spending time in nature, if it's available for you, can be tremendous support when some of these difficulties arise. And then I want to get back to talk about this inner critic. Especially when we're doing loving kindness practice for ourselves, sometimes it might feel like this inner critic is really loud and persuasive and persistent. It can feel almost like there's a sub-personality inside of us that's constantly putting us down. And sometimes these are just flickering thoughts or soft thoughts that maybe they're just so familiar that we don't even recognize them, or we think like, okay, that's just who I am. But it's more, it's just a constellation. It's causes and conditions that have come together. There's nothing concrete about them, this inner critic. Even though we tend to think that there is, or it tends to feel like it is. I'll say a little bit more about this, but one way that it shows up, maybe I'll describe it, is constantly putting us down. You don't deserve metta. Like, ouch. Or belittling us. You should be giving metta to others, not focusing on yourself. Oh, like, ouch, right? Or this voice of negativity that sometimes shows up. Whatever you're doing, it's not going to work. Or you're not doing it right. It's unfortunate that so many of us, not everybody, but that so many of us have this inner diatribe, this habitual way and thought pattern that arises, nagging at us, kind of having this pervasive sense of shame and this harshness. And when this inner critic is up and running, there's often this feeling of inadequacy, of not being enough, or somehow feeling like who I am or how I am is not enough. And wow, there's so much pain that can be caught up in this structure. And some people feel like it's just them, like they're the only ones that have this inner critic, that everybody else feels is doing fine. But I think it can be helpful to recognize it's important to know that this is not uncommon. And I've heard from a number of other people who have said, you know, during practice discussions, one thing that happens when we have group practice discussions is they hear other people talking about their inner critic, not using necessarily that language, but we say like, oh, that person seemed like they had it all together. And then they hear that they have an inner critic, and we start to realize, oh, I have it, and this other person did. Maybe it's not so rare. So it's understandable that people have this. We learn it from school, from society, from family. It's this cultural phenomenon, and it's important not to blame oneself for having this inner dynamic. But instead of choosing one event, one memory, one particular perception, and clinging to it and giving it meaning and giving it significance and creating a whole self around it. Instead of choosing the one thing, that time that we maybe made a mistake or didn't do things that's absolute best way it could be done or something like that, instead, can we respect ourselves? Our coming to this retreat, our intention to grow and develop, our meditation practice, our goodness that we all have. We're not creating anything new here with this practice. We all have this warmth, this goodness, this beauty inside of us. We all express it. We're just creating the conditions in which we can make it be boundless. So can we respect ourselves for this, coming to this retreat? It's a beautiful thing to do. Respect ourselves for our care with our ethics. Sometimes people are dismissive. Yeah, well, of course I'm not stealing things and lying and harming others. But can you imagine what the world would be like if we didn't do this? Like, oh, like it's unimaginable, right? So I want to kind of respect ourselves for behaving ethically, appreciating our goodness, and connecting to our deepest aspirations. Our aspirations to find freedom, find peace, support others, support ourselves, whatever your aspiration might be. To have loving kindness that is boundless, unconditional, which allows a different kind of life to unfold. So when we're to work with that inner critic with some loving kindness, I want to say that when the machinery of the inner critic is up and running with all of its power and locomotion, this momentum, it may feel like doing loving kindness practice may seem silly. This idea of spitting into the ocean or something. But that is just that perception at that moment. It's the perceptions of the inner critic. It's the thoughts of the inner critic, and they feel like they are real and convincing. But this inner critic is just a tight, habitual orbit of thoughts. That's all. It's just a tight, habitual orbit of thoughts. Thoughts are ephemeral. They don't have any substance. They poof, they go. You'll have another one, right? So loving kindness practice helps us set up different habits of thinking, the different habits of showing up with some kindness and some spaciousness and some well-wishing. And with this loving kindness, establishing this habit, the habit of the inner critic just starts to lose its power. And of course, this takes time. It takes patience. And it takes some confidence or some faith that we are planting the seeds. And we might not see the fruits right then. But even just to undermine the momentum of this inner critic, we shouldn't underestimate how powerful that is. So maybe I'll say just a few more things about if difficulties arise. And just recognizing that we don't have to make them be a problem. Is there a way that we can shift our perspective or shift our attention so that we can include them into our meditation practice instead of like, oh, this is a problem, it has to go away, or it's it can't be here, or some ways in which we can work with things or see our experiences in a way that allows the problemness to kind of like drain out of them. Like, okay, yeah, this is what's happening. This is suffering. But without necessarily having to make it be a problem or something that has to be fixed. And so one way in which we might approach this or help with this kind of like shift in perspective is to, if we discover that we're having this persistent difficulty, I'm using this word, I wish I had a better word, something that's this persistent pattern that shows up. And maybe this is the last thing I'll offer is all these different ways of which to work with them is maybe there's a gentle inquiry. What is asking for acceptance? What is asking for some warmth? What is asking for some kindness? What is asking for some metta? Because often repeated patterns show up because there's some level of resistance, there's an aversion, or there's some fear or judgment that are locked up inside or somehow. And so is there a way that we can have acceptance, that we can allow, we can have warmth, we can have kindness for the fear, the aversion, and the judgment also? So sometimes just that, not that we have to find the answer, but it's the asking of the question. What's needing some attention? What's needing some warmth, some of this loving kindness, some of this care? And it's the asking with the intention of offering care is the way that we work with this, rather than just the trying to get to the bottom of it so that we can fix it. So when we're doing loving kindness practice, some difficulties, some hindrances that arise, can we be inclusive and include them in with our practice? That might mean if we're doing a loving kindness for ourselves, and it feels like we just are feeling stuck and can't bring the warmth to the difficulty, maybe it's helpful to go to the lovable being, the easy being, and allow ourselves to be nourished there, and then to come back to the lovable being, or be with the lovable being and allowing the difficulty to be there while we're also with the lovable being, the easy being. And then if it feels like, okay, this difficulty is just too much, and feels like it would be helpful to turn towards it. So maybe, to shift, say, to some mindfulness practice and to be with the hindrances specifically, or to do this practice of what is asking for acceptance, saying it's okay, saying this is suffering, connecting with other people that might have some difficulties. Maybe you have, meditation practice and you already have a different number of different ways in which you can work with difficulties. So there's a way with this practice that we're doing metta until it feels like the metta is just not available and we can turn towards the difficulty. Work with it with a warm-hearted way, and then come back to the metta. But the invitation here in a metta retreat is to see, can you just be inclusive and maybe dwelling in non-aversion, or just befriending each moment, maybe stretching our definition or interpretation of metta to help us to be with the difficulties, the hindrances that come up. Maybe I'll stop there. I have more to say. I'm just feeling into this. Feels like already a lot. So let's just sit together for a little bit. Thank you for your practice. and your kind attention.